Welcome back to our statewide conversation. This is your chance to talk to Minnesota state officials about how the state of Minnesota is responding and planning during this current COVID-19 pandemic. Today, here to answer your questions is Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. I'm Heidi Holt, and I'm live from the KEXE studios on the banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. I want to thank you for listening today. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. This broadcast is a collaboration of the 18 community radio stations of Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, as well as the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, bringing you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Governor Walz, thanks so much for taking time to be back with us today.
Well, good morning, Heidi. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Well, we've heard from a lot of people this week, but first I'd like to kind of talk to you about being the leader in the state of Minnesota. God forbid you were to get COVID-19. I'm curious if you've thought ahead. What is your responsibility to the state, to the people that you are around, about you contracting the illness?
Yeah, well, this is an important question, and anything in state government, I have the privilege and the responsibility of these decisions have to be made. It's how our democracy works, and that might be just things as far as using the National Guard, or if we had a flood or something like that, how would we respond, as well as the day-to-day operations. And the state is very clear that the continuance of operation plans would transfer that authority to the lieutenant governor, and we take this very seriously. This might surprise some of your listeners, but I'm a pretty avid runner. I run about 30 miles a week, and last summer I had a torn meniscus, so I went in. That was going to be a very small procedure to fix a torn meniscus, but they put you under general anesthesia. We transferred power to the lieutenant governor during the time that I was under anesthesia, because I cannot make decisions until I was able to come out of that and then be able to make informed decisions. So Minnesota is solid about this. It moves down a chain of command from the lieutenant governor to the president of the Senate. But I think there's a real responsibility to be as open as possible about both the health of myself and my administration to carry out what is their responsibility to Minnesotans.
All right. Well, let's get to some of the questions from listeners around the state of Minnesota. We'll start off with Kathy from Itasca County. She is a small business owner, but her question isn't about the economy due to COVID-19. In fact, she said she has deep concerns that the focus has been too much on the economy and not on the health and safety of the people of Minnesota. She writes us, "I'm very concerned with the rise of cases in my county. However, when you walk into a business and there aren't many people, employees, and customers wearing a face covering, this is very disturbing. I've told my staff, if they feel unsafe, to leave, but I think my attitude may lead to me losing business. I don't think small businesses should have to be put in the position of being the face covering police. And we have police, their job is to keep us safe." And so she said that they ticket you when you do something against the law. She said, "We changed the law to buy alcohol, to buy cigarettes. We know that changing a law to make face coverings mandatory isn't going to happen on a national level, but could there be a state law for the safety of people in Minnesota having to do with face masks?"
Yeah, well, first of all, to Kathy, I would just want to express, I know our small businesses have been hit by COVID-19, as all families have, but especially in the hospitality industry. It's just because the nature of having lots of people in small places. And back in July, I did make a move on an executive order that put things into place that Minnesotans are required to wear a face covering in all indoor businesses. Part of that is just like so many things, that yes, we have enforcement, but I don't take pleasure in doing that. We're following the science and following the recommendations of both the Minnesota Department of Health, the CDC, the Mayo Clinic, and others. But it's like so many things in our society, it takes voluntary compliance by a number of people. For example, State Patrol can't arrest everybody for speeding, but we do spot checks. We try and get people in. And I do worry about this, that this mask situation should have never become politicized. And we have horrific stories of, neighbor fighting with neighbor and businesses you know, being required, like you sometimes would have a situation with an unruly customer and you handle it accordingly. You ask them to leave if that's what's necessary. But this has just become so politicized. And so what I would tell Kathy is the things that Minnesota can do to keep our businesses open, and we've done this. And as we're seeing, the three states with the highest infection rates border Minnesota right now, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And the result of that is businesses are closing in those states. It doesn't matter what the mandate is. It doesn't matter if those three states don't have a mask mandate. The virus doesn't care. And so what I would just ask folks is that one of the ways we can keep these businesses like Kathy's open, our schools open, our kids doing the things they want to do, is just following that social distancing, washing your hands, and wearing a face covering. So it is in place. I will tell Kathy that, you know, it's certainly not my intention to use the police to go out and arrest people for not doing this. But I think there is a social pressure that falls with this. I'm hoping that it's sinking in. There's a beautiful video I would ask people to maybe go. You can see it. I think I'll put it up on my site. Just a group of high school kids in Martin County, because it's really growing down in southern Minnesota, the spread of COVID. They just put a beautiful video together and said, people, please help us get back to school. Just wear the mask. It's not that big a deal. And that was their message, not my message. That was their message. And I do echo that, but I think Kathy's right. This is a tough one. COVID has upset the normal workings of things. It's put people in untenable situations. But once again, the decisions we're making are all based on what is best for the safety, the security. And I think Kathy's point was, I'm trying to strike the balance. Our businesses and our bars and restaurants have been open longer than they have in Florida, and we have a lower infection rate because I think we're doing things right, and I want to continue us moving in that direction.
We had a call this week from Mary. She called and left a message at 612-562-9895. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I'm in northern Minnesota. My question for Governor Walz is, when are we going to start having hazardous waste receptacles placed at area businesses, at stores, at other places where they are necessary? Because I've seen numerous masks everywhere, on the ground, in trees, in bushes, in the forest, in the lakes, in the park, on the streets. And this is a hazard. It's not safe to pick these up because you don't know if there is still a live COVID virus on there or whatever else disease there may be. People need to learn to pick up and throw their masks away in a hazardous receptacle so that COVID virus is not spread in another way. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks to Mary for that call. Your response, Governor?
Yeah, well, Mary, thank you for the call, and you're right. I mean, there's the good news story, and this is your mask. That's a good thing. But I would encourage all Minnesotans, just like anything with our waste, we need to be responsible. And Mary's right. During a pandemic, we need to think of the consequences of consumption. I would just say, unless you're an incredibly high risk individual, or you're in that medical setting, there's no need for the N95 masks. And we know that the data supports that reusable masks, if done correctly, help stop and slow the spread from one to the other. So I would just, this is a case of so much of us with COVID is that we have to sacrifice some of our individual ways of doing things for the greater good. And this would be one of those. Throw the mask away. I'm glad people are wearing them, but certainly nobody else wants to have to pick those things up. And recognize that by doing so, it's just another one of those neighborly things that Minnesotans do. Again, this doesn't have to be this political fight about it. I know we've had these before, whether it was smoking indoors, whether it was the use of seat belts, or more recently when I signed into law the hands-free law, that, yeah, it took away some of your freedom to use your cell phone and text while you're driving. But the reason we did that is to protect you and, equally important, protect others from being hit by you while you were distracted. And so the mask thing falls into that. Throw them away.
We had a question. You mentioned the state surrounding the state of Minnesota. Someone wrote into us and said, is there an interstate relationship between Minnesota and the Dakotas and Wisconsin concerning coronavirus? And are you trying to give them any advice since we are containing the virus a little bit better than them right now?
Yeah, there certainly is. And I can tell you that, governors, the National Governors Association is all 50 of us plus the territories. And we have a weekly call and we work together. I have a really good working relationship and friendly relationship with our surrounding governors. Because of the lack of a national strategy, the United States determined that this would be a decentralized 50-state strategy. And I have not made it any secret. I think that was a poor decision. I think it's the reason why the United States response has probably been the worst of any of the industrialized nations. But I figured early on we needed to be communicating back and forth. For your listeners, this is the hardest part, where you have conflicting situations where, say, for example, Minnesota has a mask mandate and North Dakota doesn't, and you live in, you live in Moorhead and you live in Fargo, and you drive two blocks and it's a different situation. That's one thing we're trying to talk about, trying to figure out how to work. One of the things I can tell you is that Minnesota, and there was a story in the Rapid City Journal in South Dakota, Minnesota hospital beds are being occupied. In the Southeast, about 30% of those beds are with people from Wisconsin. And we're there to help our neighbors. So there are those types of compacts. It's a tough one. Of discussing there, I'm on with a group once every couple weeks that includes Governor Evers from Wisconsin, Governor Whitmer from Michigan, Governor DeWine from Ohio, Governor Holcomb from Indiana, Republicans and Democrats, where we share best practices. We say, hey, this is how it's working. Or they say, for example, Governor Burgum and myself in Minnesota are working on how we're going to distribute and execute the vaccine plan when it comes. The federal government asked five states who have a pretty good track record of doing this, in North Dakota and Minnesota being two of those. We're actively working together of how we will do that. So, yes, the answer is yes, that we work together. Yes, that we try and find solutions. But it is also created, I'm not going to be naive, and your listeners know it, it's created some tensions amongst governors where there's differences in how we're handling this and where there's differences approaches. And I think maybe the most glaring example of that was the Sturgis motorcycle rally in South Dakota, which created some tension for a lot of governors because of, the incident, as it proved out to be, that there would be spread from that event.
We're talking with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz today. It's our statewide conversation on COVID-19. Last Sunday, the Star Tribune did an incredible piece about how COVID has affected people in Minnesota. One of the people in there they included was your health commissioner, Jan Malcolm. You held a roundtable earlier this week to talk with people in the same way about how this is affecting people on a personal level. And I feel like that's a way where we can see more clearly about this virus. What did you hear and what did you learn this week from those folks?
Yeah, and well, thank you for mentioning Jan Malcolm, too. We have a real superstar and a really caring, smart public servant at the Department of Health. And we held the roundtable. One of the things was, and I just want to be very clear to your listeners, again, I want to stress this idea, the sense of frustration around this, the COVID fatigue. I'm living in a rural area where I don't see a lot of this, and all these things are just horrible. You're not going to get an argument out of me out of any of those things. Those are all true. And these decisions we have to make are meant to prevent what we know when you have a new and unprecedented 100-year event like we're seeing with the novel coronavirus. I wanted to hold a roundtable to have people talk about this because it is so unpredictable and it is so frustrating, where some people say, well, it's just like the flu. For some people it is. Heck, for some people it's even less than that. But for others, it ranges from killing you to just devastations. There was a gentleman on who's a concert pianist who started getting the sniffles, started feeling a pretty high fever, went into the hospital. The next thing he remembered was 14 days later coming out of a coma and he couldn't move his hands. Just devastating effects. And what we don't yet know, and what came out of that roundtable, was telling people that we don't know yet what this is going to do to people 2 and 3 years down who even got a mild case of it. So what the, you know, the strategy is, slow this thing down enough so we don't overwhelm our hospitals, slow the transmission so that it doesn't hit the most vulnerable, and then move us towards a place where we can get therapeutics that make treatment better, which we're seeing is working, and then a vaccine, which I am hopeful we're getting near to. And that's what came out of that, plus caregivers who say, you know, if you've been lucky enough not to be touched by this and you don't think it's a big deal, count your blessing. Because if you see the other side of it, and that's not to spread fear in people. I want to be very clear about this. We don't spread fear. You spread information and you spread smart, cautious approaches to things. For example, when I teach my children to cross the street, I don't want them to be fearful every time they cross the street. I want them to be cautious when my little ones would cross the street. Same thing with this. And the purpose was to bring that up to show people that this is real. It can be managed. And there's things all of us can do to make that a little better. But don't dismiss or think that it hasn't come to you yet, that it's not serious. So it was meant to be a little more educational, I think.
We heard from one of our listeners this week. They emailed, they said at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of talk about hospital capacity. Can you give us an update about where the capacity is right now? And has it been built up in rural areas as well?
Yes, and this is a great question. And I would refer all of your listeners to our dashboard on the Minnesota Department of Health site. There you can find out how many masks we have, how many gloves we have, all these things that as a nation, just to be candid, we weren't ready for. And I don't point the blame at anybody on this because I don't have time to point the blame. I just have to recognize that we needed to go out there and figure out how to get these things. And it became a wild west to try and buy them. I was finding warehouses in Germany where someone had a connection to be able to buy these things and move them. And one of the first things, when you saw this melting down in New York City, you saw what happened in Italy, there was a real fear. And unfortunately, we're seeing it today. They are building a field hospital on the grounds of the state fair in Milwaukee because their hospitals have reached that capacity. That's how quickly it can happen. And for your listeners, you know this, in rural areas and in urban areas, we don't have a ton of excess beds sitting around. That's very expensive. And so we have a set amount of hospital beds that work and that are there in case we have a surge in seasonal flu. But for most parts of the year, it's pretty predictable around broken arms, appendectomies, baby deliveries, cancer treatment. What happens when you have something like this, the capacity is very small to take on a lot of excess. So we went and built and figured out how we could add capacity. And my statement to the people of Minnesota in March was, I needed that time to make sure that if you or a loved one ended up in the hospital, there would be a bed for you and there would be every piece of equipment, including a ventilator. At that time was one of the only ways we could save people. Now it's things like remdesivir and some of the treatments you saw that President Trump was able to receive. That's a good thing. And so in Minnesota, I still can say with confidence that we have that space, but it is getting smaller. And the irony, maybe not the irony, just maybe the way it is, the beds are a little bit tighter in the urban areas because of sheer demographic volume. But we have done statewide, and this was a good thing that we had never done before, all the hospitals can see where all the beds are. All the hospitals can see where all the masks are and the gowns and the gloves. And should we need to level, cross-level, and some of your listeners, if you're in a small area where maybe you only have 4 or 5 ICU beds, it may be if this situation got too bad, we might have to cross-level, meaning move you somewhere else, but that will happen. So that's part of the preparation. The thing is, we also have the capacity to expand that. We can basically add about double our ICU capacity within 72 hours based on the pre-planning that we did. And that's what you see being executed over in Wisconsin. My hope is we never need to do that, but I can tell each of you that is not an issue here, and you will get the care. And in any corner of the state, there will be the capacity to care.
You have been, or the Republicans have been very critical of you about a warehouse building that the state purchased at the beginning of this pandemic in case we needed a giant morgue during the pandemic. Is the building just sitting empty now? Can it or should it be repurposed for something else? Can you tell us about it?
Yes. And first of all, the state has a lot of assets and a lot of different buildings, from campuses to MnDOT, you know, salt storage facilities. One of the things we did not have was a proper space, because these are very specific what you need, a specific space to handle with dignity human remains. And what we were seeing in early March was the state of New York was overwhelmed. They were renting trucks that hauled meat in them to put bodies of our loved ones. And I and will stand by this decision from an insurance buying insurance, if call it what you will. I was not going to allow our loved ones to be stacked that way. And we have this facility. We purchased it. It was prepared and still remains that way. And God help us, as I said when I bought it, I never want to use this, and I will take responsibility. We are storing the state stockpile of personal protective equipment and those types of things in it. It can be repurposed. It can be moved, like excess property always is. Every year we move a lot of property both in and out of the state inventory. One of the things we're looking at is that, as I mentioned, the state is one of the five states that has been tasked to figure out who gets the vaccine, how do you deliver it. One of the things we're finding out that it looks like one of the vaccines, and there'll be several companies sending them, one of them, and all vaccines have to be stored in a temperature-controlled environment, but it looks like the COVID vaccine will be what's called ultra-cold storage, has to be stored at 90 below zero. We couldn't even store it outside in Grand Rapids in January. We have to have some place, and this facility could be used for that. So those who are being critical, here's what I'll say is, I will take the responsibility as governor of Minnesota that your loved ones were not going to be stacked like cordwood in a truck, and that all of the best information in March warranted us building this facility. And I will, as we already have, be able to use it for other sources. But if that's your critique against me, I will certainly own that one.
We heard from another listener this week who was asking about capacities of restaurants and that those are going to be raised. They said it does not seem like we need that in any way. It almost seems like we should have less capacity inside with the growing number of cases. Why change the guidelines now?
Yes, and this is a fair question. And I think your listener's point was that this has been a real challenge of striking that proper balance. And what we've done is we've limited the capacity to the fire marshal's code. It has not been as big a problem for these businesses because we've been able to use the outdoor space. And I know it's nearly 70 degrees up there today, but my guess is in 2 weeks it certainly will not be. And I'm trying to find the proper balance between what I can do from a public safety perspective and take a calculated risk to not put people at risk. And so I just want to be clear about what we changed. We changed the ability of the number of people to be at the tables from 6 to 10. It doesn't necessarily change the capacity of the building. We didn't change that. But it changes how some of these buildings can reconfigure. And I think for those listeners out there who have asked all along, and very fairly asked all along, that sometimes the implementation of what feels like one size fits all is not true. One restaurant shape, just because of the physical space inside the building, might have the same exact fire marshal capacity limit, but the way it's set up in the corners and the curve and the walls might make it so that you could do it just as safely with more people in one than you could the other. And so your listener is not wrong. And just to be very clear, the White House director, Deborah Birx, when she was out to visit Minnesota a few weeks back, was encouraging us to close bars and restaurants. And her point was is that we were seeing a spread that has now proved to be true in the surrounding states, and to a small degree in Minnesota. Our numbers have gone up, but our positivity rates have still remained pretty much the same. I made the decision that I don't want to turn it back at this point in time, and that I thought we could do so safely. And so the safest, from a health perspective, would be to close them during this time. But I think you have to weigh this. I don't think that is sustainable both economically and for the physical and mental health of Minnesotans if we had to do that. So that's why that decision was made, really predicated on the coming winter. And again, I do that very cautiously, and the virus will dictate this, that I worry what happens when we're all back inside The doors are closed, the windows are closed, the vents are on, and we're recirculating this air. It's still an unknown, but I think both Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, the CDC, the Mayo Clinic, and others think that we will see a slight uptick. So I make this move with the caveat that we may need to make other moves. But this was in response to an industry that feels like they're on their last leg and feels that the coming winter was going to maybe be the final straw.
Well, before we go, I want to talk to you. I know I've asked you this, you get asked this all the time, but special session is going to begin on Monday, and the executive powers I'm doing all these candidate interviews right now as we get ready for the election, and so many of them have said that you are making unilateral decisions, that they are not included in the decision-making process. And so would you be clear for us why you need them still, and if you are the one person that's making those decisions?
Yeah, first of all, the pandemic is still ongoing. 49 other states are using those emergency powers, as is the President of the United States. I am not doing them unilaterally. I'm doing them in conjunction with health experts, with commissioners, with local elected officials, and with members of the Minnesota legislature. Every dollar I spend on these things has to end up being approved by the legislature. We include them. I had them on the calls yesterday as we walked through our vaccination plan. The reason that we need them is because if I did not have these, we would have no testing program. The collaboration and the coordination with the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic would not be done. We would not have the ability to use the National Guard to test folks in long-term care facilities. I would not have the ability to make quick decisions to purchase PPE at a better price, that personal protective equipment, to be able to be used. And to be candid, I've asked the legislature time and time again. I told them most of the things I'm doing outside of testing, I would not have to do. If they would pass a statewide mask mandate to send a message to their constituents, Republican, Democrat, that this was the right thing to do, and they refused to take it up. And then I would just end with the final thought on this. All of these powers are derived from the Constitution, and they were all vetted through the legislature and put into place. And for those who say that they don't want me to do this, these are things that are making a difference in slowing the spread. I am more than happy to let them share the responsibility with this, because they're able to set in a position now where if something goes bad, they blame me. If something goes good, they just don't say anything. And it is the way our system is set in a time of emergency, which we are still in with COVID-19. Some decisions need to be made quickly, but the courts are the checks on this. They brought up several cases and another one today. State legislatures have sued me, taken it to court, both local and federal, and they have been thrown out because the judges have said, no, this is a proper use of it. The governor is not overstepping any of those responsibilities. And the people of Minnesota elected me, and I have the responsibility to try and make the best informed decisions to keep them safe. And so I'm more than happy. If any of your listeners, rest assured, I've got a 13-year-old. Nothing would make me happier than have him right back in school right now. We put those decisions out there, and his local school, public school, has him in distant learning. I trust them on that. So I'm not making that decision alone. I'm doing it in conjunction with them. So I would ask the legislature, there's a lot of posturing. They need to lead. And again, if any of your listeners think that that is a body that moves relatively quickly, you're sadly mistaken. We haven't passed a bonding bill. They're going to come back and complain about a mask mandate when we should be finishing the roads and bridges and the projects that would benefit the folks in Grand Rapids and throughout your listening area. Everybody agrees, every chamber of commerce, every labor union, that that's what we should be doing. So I would ask them, instead of coming back and fighting with me, help me, work with me. Let's find things that work on this. Let's stop this virus and let's get Minnesota moving.
Governor, before we let you go, congratulations. I hear that you are a bobblehead.
Yes, I am. The National Bobblehead Hall of Fame has crafted a bobblehead of, good company, Dr. Fauci, Governor Cuomo, myself, and I guess a couple others, and then frontline healthcare workers. They created a bobblehead of me. So I've never had a bobblehead. I was I was telling my family that, expecting to get good respect from them, and I kind of got blank stares, but I am now a bobblehead.
Well, congratulations, and thank you, as always, for spending time with the citizens of Minnesota on this statewide conversation.
You're welcome. I